Sans screams brought Granny and his parents first to the back door and then running down the cinder path. Esk was perched in the fork of the apple tree, an expression of dreamy contemplation on her face. Cern was hiding behind the tree, his face a mere rim around a red, tonsil-vibrating ball. Gulter was sitting rather bewildered in a pile of clothing that no longer fitted him, wrinkling his snout. Granny strode up to the tree until her hook nose was level with Esk's.
"Turning people into pigs is not allowed," she hissed. "Even brothers."
"I didn't do it. It just happened. Anyway, you must admit it's a better shape for him," said Esk evenly.
"What's going on?" said Smith. "Where's Gulter? What's this pig doing here?"
"This pig," said Granny Weatherwax, "is your son."
There was a sigh from Esk's mother as she collapsed gently backwards, but Smith was slightly less unprepared. He looked sharply from Gulter, who had managed to untangle himself from his clothing and was now rooting enthusiastically among the early windfalls, to his only daughter.
"She did this?"
"Yes, or it was done through her," said Granny,
looking suspiciously at the staff.
"Oh."
Smith looked at his fifth son. He had to admit that the shape suited him. He reached out without looking and fetched the screaming Cern a thump on the back of his head.
"Can you turn him back again?"
he asked. Granny spun around and glared the question at Esk, who shrugged.
"He didn't believe I could do magic," she said calmly.
"Yes, well, I think you've made the point," said Granny. "And now will you turn him back, madam, this instant, do you hear?"
"Don't want to. He was rude."
"I see."
Esk glared down defiantly. Granny glared up sternly. Their wills clanged like cymbals, and the air between them thickened. But Granny had spent a lifetime bending recalcitrant creatures to her bidding, and while Esk was a surprisingly strong opponent, it was obvious that she would give in before the end of the paragraph.
"Oh, all right," she whined. "I don't know why anyone would bother turning him into a pig when he was doing such a good job of it all by himself."
She didn't know where the magic had come from, but she mentally faced that way and made a suggestion. Gulter reappeared, naked and with an apple in his mouth.
"What's happening?"
he said. Granny spun around on Smith.
"Now will you believe me?" she snapped. "Do you really think she's supposed to settle down here and forget all about magic? Can you imagine her poor husband if she marries?"
"But you always said it was impossible for women to be wizards," said Smith.
He was actually rather impressed. Granny Weatherwax had never been known to turn anyone into anything.
"Never mind that now," said Granny, calming down a bit. "She needs training. She needs to know how to control. For pity's sake, put some clothes on that child."
"Gulter, get dressed and stop Greslin,"
said his father, and turned back to Granny.
"You said there was some sort of teaching place,"
he hazarded.
"The Unseen University, yes. It's for training wizards."
"And you know where it is?"
"Yes,"
lied Granny, whose grasp of geography was slightly worse than her knowledge of subatomic physics. Smith looked from her to his daughter, who was sulking.
"And they'll make a wizard of her," he said.
Granny sighed.
"I don't know what they'll make of her," she said.
And so it was that a week later, Granny locked the cottage door and hung the key on its nail in the privy. The goats had been sent to stay with the sister witch further along the hills, who had also promised to keep an eye on the cottage. Badass would just have to manage without a witch for a while. Granny was vaguely aware that you didn't find the Unseen University unless it wanted you to. And the only place to start looking was a town of Ahulan Katash, a sprawl of 100 or so houses about 15 miles away. It was where you went to once or twice a year if you were a really cosmopolitan badassian. Granny had only been once before in her entire life and hadn't approved of it at all. It had smelt all wrong. She'd got lost, and she distrusted city folk with their flashy ways. They got a lift on the cart that came out periodically with metal for the smithy. It was gritty, but better than walking, especially since Granny had packed their few possessions in a large sack. She sat on it for safety. Esk sat cradling the staff and watching the woods go by. When they were several miles outside the village, she said,
"I thought you told me plants were different in foreign parts."
"So they are."
"These trees look just the same."
Granny regarded them disdainfully.
"Nothing like as good," she said.
In fact, she was already feeling slightly panicky. Her promise to accompany Esk to Unseen University had been made without thinking, and Granny, who picked up what little she knew of the rest of the disc from rumours and the pages of her almanac, was convinced that they were heading into earthquakes, tidal waves, plagues and massacres, many of them diverse or even worse. But she was determined to see it through. A witch relied too much on words ever to go back on them. She was wearing serviceable black, and concealed about her person were a number of hatpins and a bread knife. She had hidden their small store of money, grudgingly advanced by Smith, in the mysterious strata of her underwear. Her skirt pockets jingled with lucky charms, and a freshly forged horseshoe, always a potent preventative in time of trouble, weighed down her handbag. She felt about as ready as she ever would be to face the world. The track wound down between the mountains. For once, the sky was clear, the high ramtops standing out crisp and white like the brides of the sky, with their trousseaux stuffed with thunderstorms. And the many little streams that bordered or crossed the path flowed sluggishly through strands of meadowsweet and go faster route. By lunchtime, they reached the suburb of Ahulan. It was too small to have more than one, which was just an inn and a handful of cottages belonging to people who couldn't stand the pressures of urban life. And a few minutes later, the cart deposited them in the town's main, indeed its only, square. It turned out to be market day. Granny Weatherwax stood uncertainly on the cobbles, holding tightly to Esk's shoulder as the crowd swirled around them. She had heard that lewd things could happen to country women who were freshly arrived in big cities, and she gripped her handbag until her knuckles whitened. If any male stranger had happened to so much as nod at her, it would have gone very hard indeed for him. Esk's eyes were sparkling. The square was a jigsaw of noise and colour and smell. On one side of it were the temples of the disc's more demanding deities, and weird perfumes drifted out to join with the reeks of commerce in a complex rag-rug of fragrances. There were stalls filled with enticing curiosities that she itched to investigate. Granny let both of them drift with the crowd. The stalls were puzzling her as well. She peered among them, although never for 1 minute relaxing her vigilance against pickpockets, earthquakes, and traffickers in the erotic, until she spied something vaguely familiar. There was a small covered stall, black-draped and musty, that had been wedged into a narrow space between two houses. Inconspicuous though it was, it nevertheless seemed to be doing a very busy trade. Its customers were mainly women, of all ages, although she did notice a few men. They all had one thing in common, though. No one approached it directly. They all sort of strolled almost past it, then suddenly ducked under its shady canopy. A moment later they would be back again, hand just darting away from bag or pocket, competing for the world's most nonchalant walk title, so effectively that a watcher might actually doubt what he or she had just seen. It was quite amazing that a stall so many people didn't know was there should be quite so popular. "What's in there?" said Esk. "What's everyone buying?"
"Medicines," said Granny firmly.
"There must be a lot of very sick people in towns," said Esk gravely.
Inside the stall was a mass of velvet shadows, and the herbal scent was thick enough to bottle. Granny poked a few bundles of dried leaves with an expert finger. Esk pulled away from her and tried to read the scrawled labels on the bottles in front of her. She was expert at most of Granny's preparations, but she didn't recognize anything here. The names were quite amusing, like Tiger Oil, Maiden's Prayer, and Husband's Helper. And one or two of the stoppers smelled like Granny's scullery after she had done some of her secret distillations. A shape moved in the stall's dim recesses, and a brown, wrinkled hand slid lightly onto hers.
"Can I assist you, missy?" said a cracked voice in tones of syrup of figs. "Is it your fortune you want telling, or is it your future you want changing, maybe?" "She's with me," snapped Granny, spinning around. "And your eyes are betraying you, Hilda Goatfounder, if you can't tell her age."
The shape in front of Esk bent forward.
"Esme Weatherwax?" it asked. "The very same," said Granny. "Still selling thunderdrops and penny wishes, Hilda? How goes it?" "All the better for seeing you," said the shape. "What brings you down from the mountains, Esme? And this child? Your assistant, perhaps?" "What's it you're selling, please?" asked Esk. The shape laughed. "Oh, things to stop things that shouldn't be, and help things that should, love," it said. "Let me just close up, my dears, and I will be right with you."
The shape bustled past Esk in a nasal kaleidoscope of fragrances and buttoned up the curtains at the front of the stall. Then the drapes at the back were thrown up, letting in the afternoon sunlight.
"Can't stand the dark and fog myself," said Hilda Goatfounder, "but the customers expect it. You know how it is."
"Yes," Esk nodded sagely. "Headology." Hilda, a small fat woman wearing an enormous hat with fruit on it, glanced from her to Granny and grinned.
"That's the way of it," she agreed. "Will you take some tea?"
They sat on bales of unknown herbs in the private corner made by the stall between the angled walls of the houses, and drank something fragrant and green out of surprisingly delicate cups. Unlike Granny, who dressed like a very respectable raven, Hilda Goatfounder was all lace and shawls and colours and earrings and so many bangles that a mere movement of her arms sounded like a percussion section falling off a cliff. But Esk could see the likeness. It was hard to describe. You couldn't imagine them curtsying to anyone.
"So," said Granny, "how goes the life?"
The other witch shrugged, causing the drummers to lose their grip again just when they had nearly climbed back up.
"Like the horrid lover, it comes and goes,"
she began, and stopped at Granny's meaningful glance at Esk.
"Not bad, not bad," she amended hurriedly. "The council have tried to run me out once or twice, you know. But they all have wives, and somehow it never quite happens. They say I'm not the right sort. But I say there'd be many a family in this town a good deal bigger and poorer if it wasn't for Madame Goatfounder's penny royal preventatives. I know who comes into my shop, I do. I remember who buys buckaroo drops and shoe nuff ointment, I do. Life isn't bad. And how is it up in your village with the funny name?"
"Badass," said Esk helpfully. She picked a small clay pot off the counter and sniffed at its contents.
"It's well enough," conceded Granny. "The handmaidens of nature are ever in demand."
Esk sniffed again at the powder, which seemed to be pennyroyal with a base she couldn't quite identify, and carefully replaced the lid. While the two women exchanged gossip in a kind of feminine code, full of eye contact and unspoken adjectives, she examined the other exotic potions on display, or rather, not on display. In some strange way, they appeared to be artfully half-hidden, as if Hilda wasn't entirely keen to sell.
"I don't recognize any of these," she said, half to herself. "What do they give to people?"
"Freedom,"
said Hilda, who had good hearing. She turned back to Granny.
"How much have you taught her?" "Not that much," said Granny. "There's power there, but what kind, I'm not sure. Wizard power, it might be."
Hilda turned around very slowly and looked Esk up and down.
Ah, she said. That explains the stuff. I wondered what the bees were talking about. Well, well, give me your hand, child.
Esk held out her hand. Hilda's fingers were so heavy with rings that it was like dipping into a sack of walnuts. Granny sat upright, radiating disapproval, as Hilda began to inspect Esk's palm.
I really don't think that is necessary, she said sternly. Not between us.
You do it, Granny, said Esk. In the village I've seen you, and teacups and cards.
Granny shifted uneasily.
Yes, well, she said. It's all according. You just hold their hand and people do their own fortune-telling, but there's no need to go around believing it. We'd all be in trouble if we went around believing everything.
The powers that be have many strange qualities, and puzzling and varied are the ways in which they make their desires known in the circle of firelight we call the physical world, said Hilda solemnly. She winked at Esk.
Well, really,
snapped Granny.
No, straight up, said Hilda. It's true.
I see you going upon a longer journey, said Hilda. Will I meet a tall, dark stranger? Said Esk, examining her palm. Granny always says that to women. She says, no, said Hilda, while Granny snorted. But it will be a very strange journey. You'll go a long way while staying in the same place, and the direction will be a strange one. It will be an exploration.
You can tell all that from my hand?
Well, mainly, I'm guessing, said Hilda, sitting back and reaching for the teapot.
The lead drummer, who had climbed halfway back, fell onto the toiling cymbalist. She looked carefully at Esk and added,
A female wizard, eh?
Granny is taking me to Unseen University, said Esk.
Hilda raised her eyebrows.
Do you know where it is?
Granny frowned.
Not in so many words, she admitted. I was hoping you could give me more explicit directions, you being more familiar with bricks and things.
They say it has many doors, but the ones in this world are in the city of Ankh Morpork, said Hilda.
Granny looked blank.
On Circle C, Hilda added.
Granny's look of polite inquiry persisted.
500 miles away, said Hilda.
Said Granny. She stood up and brushed an imaginary speck of dust off her dress.
We'd better get going, then, she added.
Hilda laughed. Esk quite liked the sound. Granny never laughed. She merely let the corners of her mouth turn up. But Hilda laughed like someone who had thought hard about life and had seen the joke.
Start tomorrow, anyway, she said. I've got room at home. You can stay with me, and tomorrow you'll have the light. We wouldn't want to presume, said Granny. Nonsense. Why not have a look around while I pack up the stall?
Ahulan was the market town for a wide, sprawling countryside, and the market day didn't end at sunset. Instead, torches flared at every booth and stall, and light blared forth from the open doorways of the inns. Even the temples put out coloured lamps to attract nocturnal worshippers. Hilda moved through the crowd like a slim snake through dry grass, her entire stall and stock reduced to a surprisingly small bundle on her back, and her jewellery rattling like a sackful of flamenco dancers. Granny stumped along behind her, her feet aching from the unaccustomed prodding of the cobbles. And Esk got lost. It took some effort, but she managed it. It involved ducking between two stalls and then scurrying down a side alley. Granny had warned her at length about the unspeakable things that lurked in cities, which showed that the old woman was lacking in a complete understanding of headology, since Esk was now determined to see one or two of them for herself. In fact, since Ahulan was quite barbaric and uncivilized, the only things that went on after dark to any degree were a little thievery,
some amateurish trading in the courts of lust, and drinking until you fell over or started singing, or both. According to the standard poetic instructions, one should move through a fair like a white swan at evening moves o'er the bay. But because of certain practical difficulties, Esk settled for moving through the crowds like a small dodging car, bumping from body to body with the tip of the staff waving a yard above her head. It caused some heads to turn, and not only because it had hit them. Wizards occasionally passed through the town, and it was the first time anyone had seen one 4 feet tall with long hair. Anyone watching closely would have noticed strange things happening as she passed by. There was, for example, the man with 3 upturned cups, who was inviting a small crowd to explore with him the exciting world of chance and probability as it related to the position of a small dried pea. He was vaguely aware of a small figure watching him solemnly for a few moments, and then a sackful of peas cascaded out of every cup he picked up. Within seconds he was knee-deep in legumes. He was a lot deeper in trouble. He suddenly owed everyone a lot of money. There was a small and wretched monkey that for years had shuffled vaguely at the end of a chain while its owner played something dreadful on a pipe organ. It suddenly turned, narrowed its little red eyes, bit its keeper sharply in the leg, snapped its chain, and headed away over the rooftops with the knight taking in a tin cup. History is silent about what they were spent on. A box full of marzipan ducks on a nearby stall came to life and whirred past the stallholder to land, quacking happily in the river, where by dawn they had all melted. That's natural selection for you. The stall itself sidled off down an alley and was never seen again. Esk, in fact, moved through the fair more like an arsonist moves through a hayfield, or a neutron bounces through a reactor, poets notwithstanding, and the hypothetical watcher could have detected her random passage by tracing the outbreaks of hysteria and violence. But, like all good catalysts, she wasn't actually involved in the processes she initiated, and by the time all the non-hypothetical potential watchers took their eyes off them, she had been buffeted somewhere else. She was also beginning to tire. While Granny Weatherwax approved of night on general principles, she certainly didn't hold with promiscuous candlelight. If she had any reading to do after dark, she generally persuaded the owl to come and sit on the back of her chair and read through its eyes. So Esk expected to go to bed around sunset, and that was long past. There was a doorway ahead of her that looked friendly. Cheerful sounds were sliding out on the yellow light and pooling on the cobbles. With the staff still radiating random magic like a demon lighthouse, she headed for it, weary but determined. The landlord of the Fiddler's Riddle considered himself to be a man of the world, and this was right, because he was too stupid to be really cruel and too lazy to be really mean, and although his body had been around quite a lot, his mind had never gone further than the inside of his own head. He wasn't used to being addressed by sticks, especially when they spoke in a small piping voice and asked for goat's milk. Cautiously, aware that everyone in the inn was looking at him and grinning, he pulled himself across the bar top until he could see down. Esk stared up at him. "Look 'em right in the eye," Granny had always said. "Focus your power on 'em. Stare 'em out. No one can outstare a witch. Except a goat, of course." The landlord, whose name was Skiller, found himself looking directly down at a small child who seemed to be squinting.
"What?"
he said. "Milk," said the child, still focusing furiously. "You get it out of goats, you know." Skiller sold only beer, which his customers claimed he got out of cats. No self-respecting goat would have endured the smell of the Fiddler's Riddle.
"We haven't got any," he said.
He looked hard at the staff, and his eyebrows met conspiratorially over his nose.
"You could have a look," said Esk.
Skiller eased himself back across the bar partly to avoid the gaze which was causing his eyes to water in sympathy, and partly because a horrible suspicion was congealing in his mind. Even second-rate barmen tend to resonate with the beer they serve, and the vibrations coming from the big barrels behind him no longer had the twang of hop and head. They were broadcasting an altogether more lactic note. He turned a tap experimentally and watched a thin stream of milk curdle in the drip bucket. The staff still poked up over the edge of the counter like a periscope. He could swear that it was staring at him too.
"Don't waste it," said a voice. "You'll be grateful for it one day."
It was the same tone of voice Granny used when Esk was less than enthusiastic about a plateful of nourishing salad greens, boiled yellow until the last few vitamins gave in. But to Skiller's hypersensitive ears, it wasn't an injunction, but a prediction. He shivered. He didn't know where he would have to be to make him grateful for a drink of ancient beer and curdled milk. He'd rather be dead first. Perhaps he would be dead first. He very carefully wiped a nearly clean mug with his thumb and filled it from the tap. He was aware that a large number of his guests were quietly leaving. No one liked magic, especially in the hands of a woman. You never could tell what they might take it into their heads to do next.